Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
It's President's Day. And President Thomas Jefferson, the third president of these United States, is on the phone. President Jefferson, this is John Williams. How are you, sir?
A good day to you, my dear citizen.
By the way, speaking of letter writing, we were just sharing, Mr. President, with our listeners, the fact that former Congressman Jesse Jackson Jr. and his mother had a letter exchange while he was in jail. You were a great letter writer yourself, were you not?
I was. That was one of the few ways we could communicate in my time. I wrote about 26,000 letters, more probably, but 26,000 have been saved. Beginning when I realized that I was going to be a historical figure, I began keeping copies of all of my letters, which is very tedious business. And when you write the letter and you have to write the copy of it, I eventually had a copying machine that was very, very primitive. But so I wrote letters, and I worked really hard on these letters. I would think about them for quite a while before putting quill to paper.
I didn't think about that. But yeah, if you write a letter and send it off, you don't get to keep the letter. So for you to have a copy of the letter, for you to publish your letters, unless somebody went out and collected them all, and who knows where they went, you have to... Well, I wonder if that changes the authenticity of the exchange then. That is, you aren't writing to me, you're writing to posterity.
Well, to a certain degree, that's true. But I always tried to write for the person who was the recipient. In other words, I slightly adjusted my point of view depending on whether it was a letter to Mr. Madison or a letter to John Adams or a letter to, say, the scientist Joseph Priestley. I kept my core set of values, but I tried always to be thinking of the person at the other end of the ocean or the other end of our colonies and to shape what I said for maximum persuasion, but also to show real sensitivity to that person's point of view. So it was tedious. I don't think that this really cut into the spontaneity or the authenticity. I wasn't writing for posterity, but I knew at a certain point that inevitably I would be a historical figure. And I said late in life that my biography would probably have to be written from my letters because they were as close to an autobiography as I had produced.
Seems like the Founding Fathers were that way anyway. They had aphorisms and sayings. They would publish their rules to live by. You rewrote the Bible, for crying out loud. And it just seems like many of the Founding Fathers had an eye to the future. I don't think we do that now. We try and hide from our correspondence these days. You all seem to have a different take on that.
Well, we knew that this was a historically important moment, so we broke with Great Britain in 1776, and we created a republic. And really, it was the first republic ever. There had been some approximations in ancient Rome and a few things in the early 17th century in the Low Countries of Europe. But we were really creating the first republic based upon classical principles of separation of powers and checks and balances and trying to give maximum sovereignty to the people and minimal government in order to coordinate their social activities. And so we were aware that the whole world was watching, and not just the whole world was watching, but history was watching. And we were so acutely aware, John, that if we failed, if our experiment collapsed, if somehow we couldn't make a republic work, then the pessimists and the dictators and the tyrants of the world would say, see, we gave it a chance. The Americans tried it. It failed. And therefore, we can stop talking such nonsense and return to more centralized and authoritarian systems of power, which are efficient and which actually do work in the real world. So we weren't quite paranoid about this, but we were certainly aware that if we failed, it would be a setback for the cause of human freedom.
That's a lot to think about. That's a lot on your shoulders, isn't it?
It was. I was pretty sure we were right. You know, the people are sovereign. In a state of nature, without government, you have maximum freedom to do whatever you please. But if you decide, five of you decide to form a little social compact to respect each other's property, to tolerate each other's religious points of view, to tax yourselves on an equitable basis for, say, hiring a tutor for your school children, that once we enter a state of society, we give up some of our full complement of natural rights, but we need to do the least of that. We need to maintain the maximum liberty and freedom that we possibly can with a government that can create a minimal social order. And so we knew that we were right, that this is the only form of government that really can stand the test of reason and equality and the dignity of man. But the question was, are the people up to it? You know, the people are sovereign, but can they actually govern themselves?
Yeah, I'll get to that in just a second. Thomas Jefferson's on the phone. Imagine that. It's 217 on WGN Radio, and Mr. Jefferson is going to be in the Chicago area, and for one of the first time, well, for the first time in a very long time, I like to interview the presidents on stage. Sometimes we interview Teddy Roosevelt. Sometimes it's TJ. We are going to visit with him at the Athenaeum Theater in Chicago. He's going to be in Chicago, the city proper. I could almost walk there from where I live. On May 18th, mark that on your calendars. You can't get tickets yet, but you will be able to soon. May 18th, Thomas Jefferson in town. Happy President's Day, by the way, which I think I heard on TV today. In some states, they still call it Washington Day. Is this today Washington Day? So some places call it President's Day, some places call it Washington's Day. I think that's correct.
I've heard that it's Washington's birthday.
Washington's birthday, yeah. You cool with that? Should we have a President's Day? Should we carve out a day and make it a holiday to honor guys like you?
No, of course not. The president is a public functionary. He's a citizen like other citizens. We don't want to aggrandize this person to make him seem like the monarch of England or the dictator or the priest or the central person in American life. The president should be kept in his place. You know, the first article of the Constitution is about Congress, and only the second article is about the executive, because we have learned the hard way that strong executives can be tyrants. So I didn't ever let people know my birthday. By the way, it's April 13th, but people wanted to have a holiday, and I said, absolutely not. If any president in your history deserves to be remembered with a holiday, it would be George Washington, not only because he saved this country on the field of battle and really set the protocols of the presidency during his two terms as the first president of the United States, and by the way, the only unanimously chosen president in American history, but also because he had a very strong sense of the limits of executive power.
Yeah.
He was always trying to retire. He didn't think of himself as an American king, and so he deserves a special level of respect that I think no other president deserves, and certainly I would not want to be included in a President's Day.
Well, times have changed. Now, you may have a question or comment for President Jefferson. My number is 312-981-7200. There have been a couple of things about the president in the news from a constitutional standpoint that I think, while you didn't author the Constitution, I think your opinion would be most relevant on President Jefferson. So stay right there. 312-981-7200. TJ's on the phone. And if you have a question or comment, we'd love to hear it at WGN. Call me now. Thomas Jefferson, third president of these United States, joins us on WGN Radio. You still there, Mr. Jefferson?
Yes, sir.
By the way, college costs are killing families these days. You know, when I get to be king, I like to say on the radio sometimes, I think that college should be free the same way high school is. What do you think of that, Mr. Jefferson?
Well, I did something called the Bill for the More General Diffusion of Knowledge back in Virginia in the 1770s, and I said that we should have free university fellowships for the very best of our young people, but we should have free public education for all, boys and girls. So a high school degree in my time would have been equivalent to a college degree in yours. That's entirely a state matter, my friend. I think that each state is a laboratory of our democracy, and Virginia might have one approach to this, and your Illinois might have a different approach. I don't see any reason why there should be a single standard in a free society like our own.
Bill wanted to ask you a question. Bill, you're on WGN. Hi.
Hi. I was wondering how Thomas feels about his image being up on Mount Rushmore, and if he doesn't think he belongs there, who should be there?
That's a great question. I would rather that I would not be carved onto a mountain in the Dakotas. I think that creates a sort of false sense of the greatness of our presidents. I think that we must be very careful not to over-aggrandize them and to make them a sort of group of secular saints. And so I would be opposed to my own image there. I think George Washington's might be a good idea. And also, I have to spend eternity next to Theodore Roosevelt, and Roosevelt hated me. Roosevelt said so many nasty things about me in the course of his life that it's very disagreeable. I'm a gentleman, and I don't think that we should ever talk in a vulgar or negative way about other presidents or other political figures.
630 said, President Jefferson, I find it ironic that you're constantly engaging with someone that aspires to be king. I would be a good king, though, just for the record.
Well, I don't know that, but you certainly seem to be a rational human being, and I don't think you do a lot of ad hominem attacks on people who disagree with you. And from the little experience I have in talking with you on stage or hearing you, you often are quite willing to listen to points of view that are not your own and to acknowledge the legitimacy of those points of view, even when you disagree. And I think that's the very basis of a democracy. You know, Voltaire is said to have said, Madam, I disagree with what you say, but I shall defend to the death your right to say it. And I always said to people, we can disagree, but let us disagree as rational friends.
Do you think the president has too much power?
Yes. The Constitution is clear. Congress is to lead. And, you know, you said a moment or two ago about presidential meddling in appropriations and so on. The Founding Fathers, and I was not one of them, I was not in Philadelphia, but they were very clear about this, that all bills involving money had not only to begin in Congress, never the executive, but they had to begin in the House of Representatives, because that's the House, that's the body in Congress that's closest to the people, that's elected every second year. And so they made sure that two things had to begin in the House of Representatives. One was fiscal matters, and the other was war, because those are the two gravest things that a legislative body can do: spend your money, take it out of your pocket and spend it, or to send you or your children into harm's way in war. And so those have to begin in the House.
I understand
the executive can spend money, but they can't generate the spending of money.
In extraordinary times, though, I think you need a general to say, okay, but now I'm just going to lead and you're going to have to trust me on this. And it could be at a time of war or some national health emergency where we don't have time. Let's just get it done. The president is trying to do that with the wall on the southern border.
No, I think you're wrong about this, and now you're revealing your monarchical aspirations. This is something that we would have put in the Constitution had we intended it. In other words, in the Roman Republic, the ancient world, there was a provision for dictatorial powers, that under emergencies they could name a dictator and he would have a year or 2 years or some limited amount of authority, and then that provision would end at the end of the emergency. That was part of their constitution, but the 55 men who made our constitution did not have a provision for emergency or dictatorial powers.
Well, maybe
even
they,
in a time of urgency.
Maybe they hadn't thought about it, or maybe they had. I mean, do you think they contemplated something like this?
Yes, of course. And in fact, in Virginia, we contemplated making our governor a dictator during the darkest period of the Revolutionary War. That would have required a constitutional amendment, and you could amend your constitution in your time. It may be that you've reached the point where you need to tear up the Constitution and write one with more executive authority. But until such time, you need to live under the bylaws that you set for yourself, and they make Congress supreme and the executive decidedly subordinate to that.
All right, we'll finish this conversation or really get into it maybe when you're on stage. I think I have very mixed feelings about overturning the will of the people, even if it's Donald Trump. But I think this conversation we're having as a country right now about exploring the 25th Amendment is not an administrative coup. It's in the Constitution now for a reason. It's a process. To explore it isn't a coup. There is a way to remove the president if you think he's incompetent. And to have that conversation cannot be treason. It's an exercise of something that's in the law. Now, you got me all
right. I couldn't agree more. No, I think you're absolutely right, sir, because the amendments to the Constitution have been very few and very far between. So you have made this your fundamental law by way of that amendment. It would not be a coup to use that law in the case of an insane president or one who had become physically incapable or whatever else it might be. But I would just urge everyone as we close to go read about the end of the Roman Republic and the coming of the Roman Empire. They were going through a period very similar to what you are going through when the existing constitution could no longer embrace the real problems of the real world. And that led to a dictatorship and one of the worst periods in human history.
I'm glad you're on Mount Rushmore, sir. You may not be crazy about it, but you know, if we had to pick four of them, I'm glad you're one of them up there.
I've always wanted to see the Great Lakes. I'll see you in May.
Yeah, no kidding. So this conversation, or something like it, right? It's what we do on stage, and then you get to ask questions, too. Sometimes it's outright funny, but it's always thoughtful and true. A conversation like this will come your way. What was the date I just said, Producer Elif? May 18th, 10:30, Athenaeum Theater in Chicago.